Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, and it is my pleasure to have with us today Christina Teo. Christina has held senior roles in Acer, IBM, 3Com and CSL Hong Kong, and she was also Yahoo Singapore's first general manager in 1999 and launched the world's first Windows-based smartphone O2 built by HTC in 2002. She has actively taken part in the global startup scene since 2016, launching other initiatives such as Asia Corporate Women and Startup Asia Women organizations. And she is today here with us to share more in her capacity as the director of PortExcel, which is the world's first maritime startup accelerator. They are empowering startups in the maritime space to have the best chance of success and to engage the maritime conglomerates to prove their product is right and after that to scale. So, Christina, thank you for your time and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Very happy to be here.
My pleasure. So I'd love to start with a little bit about yourself. And specifically, I'd love you to share with our audience, how did you... So you ended up, you were for a big chunk of your career in technology, and then for the last couple of years, you ended up in all sorts of startups and now kind of port-related maritime startups. How did that happen? Tell us a little bit about your history.
Mm-hmm. I was, in fact, very well retired, happily retired, and then I decided to move from Hong Kong, where I built most of my career, taking a lot of regional roles, but I was based in Hong Kong. So it was only like late 2016, I decided to return to Singapore. And when I returned, it was really with no particular purpose other than taking care of my elderly mother. And so I was not really looking for anything. And at that time, I still didn't know what was a startup. Right? So just incidentally, because of so much focus of our Singapore government on startup, and I, by chance, stumbled into Slush, which is really the world's largest startup community. And that was when it all came together for me. And I go like, wow, so this is where I could, in fact, still leverage all my corporate experience and kind of have a, I call it my third lease of life, where I could probably actively help people, right? But still, I was exploring, and so I decided to build some startup communities, and I decided to support women since there was an obvious gap in the market. But naturally, a lot of the things that I do are open to both men and women. Yeah. But eventually, there was a very interesting Dutch community that's called Get in the Ring, and they introduced me to PortExcel. And initially, it was really more like, can you help us to find somebody to launch our acceleration program in Singapore, because we see that you're very, very active in the startup community. So within a very short time, I've built a pretty strong traction in the startup ecosystem in Singapore. But just within the same conversation, they go like, why do we need to look any further? You are the one. And that was how my journey with PortExcel started. I like it because it was focused on corporates. It was focused on corporate innovation. And let's be honest, in the maritime industry, you can't be doing like startups in a small scale. You need the backup of all these large conglomerates. You can't really test ideas with SME, small little freight forwarders or small little supply chain suppliers, right? You really need to work with the big guys because they are the ones who is really controlling this whole complex infrastructure. And that really intrigued me. I believe that all my years in the corporate world, the kind of strategic thinking that we have is going to bring a lot of value to this digital transformation. And so even though I didn't have an idea of what an accelerator is, as much as I was very involved with the startup ecosystem, the role of accelerator was still new to me. So again, I kind of wanted to jump into this and say, now, instead of talking about it, instead of telling the startups, oh, you should go to an accelerator, why not be one, right? And really get involved and see how it works. So that's how I started my journey with PortExcel since December 2017.
Yes. Fascinating. And I mean, you definitely strike me as a doer. So that's for sure. But also what's fascinating is the fact that, you know, you have been a corporate career-driven person for most of your life. And then Now you've moved into the startups, but you know, startups in maritime or in shipping or in logistics is a very different type of a beast. And I like how you added that, and I might build upon that, even if it wasn't necessarily my intention, because it is asset heavy type of an industry. And for a startup, it's not like, you know, you start another technology company like Google or Amazon in your backyard, and then you just scale up, and then no, it's not so much. I mean, not everybody has access to a port, for example,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I'd love you to also go a little bit more in details and tell us about PortExcel. How is it structured as well? How do you accelerate startups? Who's some of the partners and the major ports behind it? You know, just so that our audience knows a little bit more about it.
So naturally, Singapore is in fact our third location, right? We're headquartered in Rotterdam, and we have another satellite in Antwerp, which is very, very active. And then we added Singapore. And technically, although I joined in December 2017, the Singapore operation and the team was really only built since August 2018. So within a very short time again, you know, we are going to have our shakedown or demo day April 2019 right now. I mean, as we speak, we're in the middle of preparing for that. So all this happened quite quickly. What I really love about the formula of PortExcel is the focus on B2B startups, right? So we are not about, although we're very much into logistics, but we're not about the last mile delivery. And the startups that we attract are not B2C startups. So for B2C, it's pretty easy, right? If you're very good in digital marketing, if you understand consumer marketing, you could actually build something overnight. But when it is B2B, partnerships, strategic collaborations, pilot testing, these are all phrases that are, you know, and key points and key milestones that these startups need to go through. And one of the things why our startups give us very, very high ratings is because as a startup, when nobody knows you and you start knocking on doors of maritime companies, really, they don't even start opening your email in the first place. So when you come through the gates of PortExcel, at least, you know, you get the attention of these maritime companies right away, right? Even before you get selected. When we are doing our validation, we involve our corporate partners right from the beginning. So these startups, they actually get instant feedback from our corporate partners. Who are our corporate partners? We focus on four sectors, right? So we focus on ports for sure. We also focus on logistics, shipping companies, energy companies, chemicals, refineries. So it's a pretty broad scope of what we call maritime and ports, right? And so every cycle of our program, we start with scouting of startups for sure. And again, they have to meet certain very stringent criteria. One of them definitely B2B. And they really do need to have a product in place. It's not just an idea that you just suddenly wake up with and or something that you cook up in school. So that's not the kind of startups that we admit into our process. So scouting takes already an easy 3 months, simply because it's not that easy to find this sort of startups that meet our criteria. And we even involve our corporate partners in our scouting process as well. Then during the validation calls that takes a place, say between 2 to 4 weeks, right? Our corporate partners sit in the calls with us, have Skype calls, because startups from all over the world can choose any of our three locations. They can choose Antwerp, they can choose Rotterdam, they can choose Singapore. And through these validation calls, they have 30 minutes each. We give them instant feedback. We even maybe already advise them, you know, potentially you could even pivot during the calls. And after that, again, PortExcel is not the one to decide which startup will get into our program. It's actually all these corporate partners. So we're talking about companies like Shell, Vopak, yeah, in the oil and gas. We're talking about large shipping companies like Maersk, right, or Panalpina, right? And then we're talking about energy companies. We're talking about even BP was also in our corporate program. We have Boskalis, yeah. So doesn't matter which nationality, which sector, they all come in and they help us to qualify. We have local companies like IMC, like YCH as well. Yeah. So I think the startups find this really valuable. Then on selection days is a very, very exclusive event, right? Where we have veterans that are more than 15 years in the industry with excellent track record, and they come and they become our jury, right? And there's a lot of kind of a speed dating sort of a methodology that we use. So all the startups that finally get selected, typically in Rotterdam, we do more, say like 15 to 25. In Singapore, we do like 10 to 15. Yeah. Next year, of course, we'll get it bigger. Yeah. And so these final selected startups, they will fly into Singapore, or if they choose Rotterdam, they fly into Rotterdam. And then we have, in Rotterdam, we have easily, including our mentors, 150 in the jury.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Mm. So every startup will get very interesting feedback from easily, say, 20 companies, you know, more than 60 professionals at one go, right? In Singapore, they'll get maybe 20 to 30 professionals, real physical touch points, yeah. And again, so a lot of startups say that this has been very, very valuable to them.
Absolutely, because it's a very intensive boot camp in which you validate and you, or you disvalidate, but at least you can pivot, right, in terms of your idea, and you get really fast information from the market and from people that know their, you know how things worked for a long time in the industry. Yeah.
And then, of course, that's not the end, because eventually the whole idea is we climax with, you know, 3 months of acceleration. Mm-hmm. So in Singapore this time, we're down to like 7 to 8 that we give them very focused attention. And then in Rotterdam, I think this year, in fact, we have a special program called Scale Up. So we do not just 3 months acceleration for startup, but even scale up. So scale up for us is companies who are already generating revenue of more than $750,000. Okay, so those are scale ups with already actual revenue customers, you know, big projects and so forth. So I think, you know, that's been the kind of journey that we put startups through. It's a lot of customized attention, because we really bring them to corporates. And during their corporate engagement, we have massive roadshows and so forth. So that's typically a 1 year cycle for us.
Yes, yes. I'd love to, I mean, I'm not necessarily specifying names, but maybe tell us a little, because you've been, I think you, I was reading on the website, you've, you know, and the scouting process, back to your point, it's massive. I think you were, you know, it was like thousands of startups literally that you have to go through. Mm-hmm. And you've had already a lot of success story, right? You had 30, 40 that have already kind of been your alumni, and you have 80 plus, I think, that are in the process. Mm-hmm. Maybe share with our audience some examples of some interesting stories that have emerged, startups that have scaled up, or, you know, some of your more memorable. I mean, everybody is memorable, because there's a lot of investment in time and effort that PortExcel puts in it. But, you know, some examples.
Yeah, so I was quite lucky, because when I first joined in December 2017, I was able to go to Rotterdam, right, to actually attend most of the processes. That was the third cohort of Rotterdam. So I did not really have visibility of the first and second cohort, but we have heard very interesting stories. So one story would be Magnetic. So they are from a previous cohort that I didn't have personal touch with, but they are a great example for us, because they were accelerated by PortExcel in Rotterdam, but they have managed to sign a contract with Vopak, right? So initially it was a pilot, but then now they are actually physically implementing in Singapore as well for Vopak. So this shows you the different stakeholders, right, that is involved in any of these startup operations. So first they have a pilot maybe in Rotterdam, and eventually, we now are having pilots in Singapore as well. And if a Singapore startup wants to go to Rotterdam, we could facilitate that. But let's talk about this particular startup of Magnetic. They started in Rotterdam, right? So through our corporate customer, Vopak, and in fact, they also are working with Shell as well, right? And so initially, the idea was not exactly immediately obvious to our corporate partners. But it was through all these facilitated arrangements that PortExcel did that suddenly our corporate partners say, okay, this was not really one of our problem statements, But you know what? This is in fact an amazing solution that's going to help us to save a lot of money. Yeah. So what does magnetic do, right? It's a certain kind of magnets that helps to reduce the density of the scaffolding and therefore the cost of erecting scaffoldings, right, for oil and gas inspection, storage tanks inspection. So this was not something that people would think about disrupting for innovation. All right, you probably say, what has magnets got to do with innovation?
Yes, right? Yes.
But in this particular case, because of this magnets, they realized that this was something that their scaffolding suppliers could actually work with. And there lies the issue with many innovation examples. Sometimes it's not about even the corporates not recognizing that innovation possibility. It's because they need to go through some other third-party suppliers to implement a solution. And so this solution, in fact, took more than a year to commercialize because the scaffolding partners that Vopak and Shell use were not really immediately enthusiastic about the solution. Because lesser scaffolding means lesser revenue for those suppliers. So eventually, our corporate partners have to step in and really spec it into their specs. And that's how then things take a ramp up for our startups. But that's a long journey, right? And that's a typical pattern for any B2B startups. It is a long selling cycle, it's a long negotiation cycle, it's a long development customization cycle. But once the deal is sealed and seen and done, once it's proven, then going to another country is going to be a lot easier. And that's what happened to Magnetic, right? That's why Vopak and Shell are taking them to different countries. Mm. And so we're very, very happy that we were part of that equation. And that's when, you know, sometimes people overestimate what innovation means, right? If we can do the same old thing, simpler, easier, less manpower required, and we can save costs, that in itself is innovation.
And I'll just make a quick note, because I don't know how many people know about Vopak, but it's basically the, and I've had the pleasure to work with them in the past, and I know that the CEO of Asia at that point, Patrick Van Voort, who's now the global head of operations, so he was saying that we're one of the largest companies that nobody heard of, and, and they are actually the largest storage, or one of the, I think they're the largest storage company for oil and gas and products. So it's a very large company, and obviously it's also extremely, they're dealing with extremely inflammable liquids, right? So then it has to be very cautious. They have to be very cautious in terms of implementing and any sort of new innovations and creative solutions. Shell the same. Obviously, there's been some major trouble in the oil and gas industry. So it's, I'm very happy that you mentioned that, because that part with B2B and with getting in, and a lot of the times it's these big players making a condition for their existing suppliers to implement innovation, right? It's not directly the startups going to the big corporates, it's going to the supplier to the big corporates, or to the supplier to the supplier to the big corporates, right? But because of the big corporates are driving the whole chain, they're driving the whole process, they can impose certain conditions with people like yourself or with other people that are mitigating and coordinating those conversations to help the whole industry move forward.
In fact, this is just one example, right? Because in this case, the stakeholder was a third-party contractor. But very often in the actual B2B kind of projects, you may also get into this issue of involving a lot of stakeholders within the corporate partner company, right? So imagine how many divisions there are in Shell, right? So you, that kind of patience is also required, getting buy-in from one division after another. And sometimes you don't even know where to start and how to continue, right? So it is nice that some of our corporate partners have an innovation team. So they are a great influencer. But not all corporate partners have that kind of innovation team. So that's another very critical point of success that we found out. And I do want to continue to speak a little bit more about Vopak, and then maybe also share a very good example of a Singapore partner, all right, or a Singapore headquartered partner, IMC, right, who is also one of our corporate partners in Singapore. Why do I want to do that? It's because One thing is Vopak has illustrated an amazing spirit. When I first joined PodExcel, in fact, they were the first one to say, we're in and we're so glad that you're in Singapore. So in fact, they taught me about PodExcel. Right? They explained to me that the reason why they wanted to partner with PodExcel, not just in Rotterdam, but also in Singapore, is because when they partner with us, we cover a wide range of segments within maritime. So then we actually cut away the silo effect. Some corporate partners, they want to do their own innovation program. But then what happens is you only attract that vertical silo, right? And innovation is supposed to break boundaries, right? So sometimes a startup may start with a particular segment as their focus, but in fact, their technology can transcend over different segments. So if the corporate partner is visionary enough and has the right innovation champion to help them, right? The whole idea about startup is they don't know everything about the maritime industry. It's not possible that they know that. So they do need this guidance from the corporate. So if a corporate partner is very open-minded and has the right people behind to really want to make a difference, they can also add a lot of value to the startups. And I think that's what Vopak has shown us, you know, that enthusiasm, that spirit of wanting to find all these nuggets, these interesting startups, and help them to kind of shape their solution. Right. Obviously, there's a lot of customization required, but that's the kind of knowledge that a startup would need from a corporate partner. So then I come to a local example like IMC as well. I mean, you know, they may not have the kind of access to innovation that Vopak has, because in Europe, definitely they are a little bit ahead of Asia. Yeah. But what we like was there was a top-down belief, right? So they actually brought us in to meet all the regional chief team and really get them to say, hey, you need to embrace startups. So we were actually our startups were brought in into the regional planning kickoff session this year, right? So that they could actually have breakouts and really discuss about what can we offer, what are your problems that you're solving, and kind of take the solution a little bit broader. I mean, this is very strategic thinking, a very open-minded approach to innovation. And this are the kind of opportunities we really jump at.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And if I can chip in my 2 cents on it, and from where I sit as a consultant to the industry in mm-hmm. some ways, from an HR as well as from a mm-hmm. management consulting perspective, mm-hmm. It's in a lot of ways, you know, the maritime or the transportation industry, let's call it in general, and I don't want to overgeneralize, but it's been set in a certain way for a long time. So mm-hmm. changes have been harder to make, for example, if we are to take technology or other industries, which is much faster moving, mm-hmm. and also because it's asset heavy. Mm-hmm. And in reality, what I have observed, and I don't think, there's been a lot of reports written on this, it's very difficult actually to make new or to come up with new ideas from within the system. So actually, it's very smart to invest in startups, to invest in companies, in people that are outside of your ecosystem, mm-hmm. that can look with fresh eyes, with fresh views, mm-hmm. build upon the expertise that you've got with the mentors and with the people that, you know, you can't be disconnected from the reality, right? Mm-hmm. But also, you cannot innovate. It's not as easy to innovate from within. So it's mm-hmm. much better, actually, to invest in those startups, and it tends to work much better than to try to do the same within your ecosystem, because it's more or less likely. Mm-hmm. And I'd love also, maybe tell us a little bit about your mentors, because I know that you have a lot of mentors in the different three locations. You have a very impressive list from mm-hmm. the, you know, from even from the government side to the mm-hmm. port side to the mm-hmm. Corporate side to the, so how do you select them? How do you engage them?
Right. I think we have a broader diversity in Rotterdam, just because really there is a greater pool there, right, from all sectors. In Singapore, interestingly, because Singapore is an Asia-Pacific hub, so it's not always easy to get people to sign up for mentorship, okay, because they're traveling most of the time. Yeah. But having said that, I think we are pretty honored to have very, very supportive mentors. what is the role of a mentor, right? First of all, they really help the startups to clear their thinking, okay? Because sometimes a startup may come in as a vertical segment, or sometimes they could come in as a horizontal technology, right? And so we always encourage them to focus. And this is where mentors can add value to say, hey, we think that the market potential, right, based on what you're providing, could be better suited to which portion of the market. So that's definitely a very valuable insight that they can offer to the startups. The other thing is, of course, you know, Port Excel is about business opportunities, right? We're not trying to help an entrepreneur to pitch better for the sake of pitching better. We are also not overly focused on fundraising. That's not the purpose of Port Excel. So what we want is to help the startups to get pilot projects, to get real business opportunities. And that's where mentors help to open doors. Yeah. So we cannot claim to know everybody in the ecosystem. So that's when we do call on the mentors and say, hey, do you know somebody who may be interested in a solution like this? Or when they mentor the startup, they're building a relationship with the startup. And very often, of course, during the 3 months of our acceleration, some of our startups will pivot. They kind of have to pivot, right? Especially if they're targeting maybe this market. If they're targeting Europe, maybe the requirement is different. So again, mentors play a big role in that as well. Yeah. So, you know, we have mentors like from BP, for example. They really like our startups, and they were like, okay, what am I going to do with this particular startups that's dealing with fishing boats? It's like, what has fishing boats got to do with BP, right? So interestingly, what they found out was actually a lot of fishing boats are at risk because they're near their facility. And there is no way to track these fishing boats. So if there is any kind of calamity or disaster, you know, right, lives are at risk. So then they put two and two together because they went to talk to their security team. And the security team say, oh my God, this is such a cost-effective way, like such a low-cost method for us now to be able to know what fishing boats are near our facility. So it's in fact great CSR purpose for them to fulfill. Therefore, let's put this into a pilot. So you see, when people really believe in innovation, they will find ways to get this bought in the company, even when it's not immediately obvious. And this was really the result of a mentor having, you know, because they really want to help these startups succeed. So they found ways to do it.
And it's also the result of getting the right people connected to the right people, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, and that's the purpose of accelerators in general. It's that ecosystem, creating that ecosystem where people talk, and yes, most of the good ideas come out of that kind of, you know, some people have it in the shower, but most people have it whilst talking to other people, right? So, I wanted to ask you also, I mean, you know, when you look at all these startups, also share maybe, and specifically, let's talk about specifically the maritime ecosystem of startups. What do you see as their main challenges? So you're helping them through the journey, you're helping them clarify. Mm-hmm. Are there certain patterns, right? If somebody's listening to this and thinking, you know, I might want to start up something, or are there certain bigger, I don't know, challenges or fallouts that they should look into? Mm. Are there certain patterns that you've seen? What are some of the sharings?
I think in the maritime space, it's definitely not as obvious because, you know, you're not dealing with daily life kind of challenges. So a lot of our founders do have maritime background, right? We have a captain, you know, who is in one of our startups, 28 years experience. So he actually understands the problems. And that's another reason why our corporate partners love to work with Port Excel, because they know that we attract serious startups with real maritime experience. You know, and for the startups, if they join an accelerator that is industry agnostic, they often find that their messages and their stories are lost.
Yes.
Because not many people understand this industry, right? So I think, you know, we have a very special place. And so we're not for the lighthearted, let's put it this way.
Mm.
90%, 95% of our startups are founded by people who have been in the industry. It could be logistics, right? You could be have worked in a freight forwarder, but you could also be, you know, really at sea, that you have been living your life like for decades at sea. So that makes it meaningful. So we're really solving real problems, problems that people have gone through and really know. Yeah, complex, of course. So I think in our case, it's not just anyone who has a great idea. Mm-hmm. Having said that, and exactly because of this, that they need our help to open those doors to big conglomerates, because maritime companies tend to be pretty complex to navigate. Even they themselves do not know everybody within the company, right? So for us to find the right division and the right person to help them, that's the role we play. So I would say this is an industry that has immense potential. I mean, if you even just digitalize a very small section of a process, it will go very far. So I think the reward is big, but the effort is also very big. So it's not for the lighthearted.
Mm, mm. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, and for the audience, we've just witnessed a few pitches before we went live. And
mm-hmm.
When you look at the result and the return on investment is mind-boggling, right? In terms mm-hmm. of, you know, you can save millions of dollars on the first mm-hmm. on the first test. It's just that to implement that test and to get the buy-in from the management, because there's people's lives yes. at risk, mm-hmm. is not as, you know, straightforward as, I don't know, to do a new solution on a supermarket rack, right? I mean, I'm just giving an example, yes. right? Not that yes. supermarkets are listening. Important, but mm-hmm. it's not people's lives at risk.
Correct.
So it's an important distinction to make, and obviously mm-hmm. it takes a lot longer to implement these things. And
mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, as industry specialists ourselves, and I see this across the different aspects of supply chain. So whether it is shipping or whether it's logistics or aviation, for that matter. When I say aviation, is the cargo side, not necessarily yeah. the passenger side, but mm-hmm. also the passenger side.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's transportation in general, mm-hmm. it's an industry, and it's a field that needs change.
Yes.
That digital solutions and digital transformation is coming to it.
Yes.
It's traditionally not been exposed so much, or it's mm-hmm. it's still holding back in a lot of, you know, you look at trade, you look at customs, you look mm-hmm. at, I mean, also from an government perspective is very paper-based, right?
Yeah.
Bill of lading. I mean, certain of these things are very archaic in nature mm-hmm. by design mm-hmm. almost.
Mm-hmm.
But also therein lies the opportunity, because you can make a much bigger impact in there than, I don't know, in again, I don't want to use maybe comparison. It's much more impactful.
Mm-hmm.
It may take longer, but it's also more rewarding if
yeah.
you operate there.
I think it's happening, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the key word is transparency. Maybe before there was a lot of resistance to transparency because there wasn't really a solution, right? But I think today you do have solutions. So then, you know, it gives that resistance a lot, you know, you don't have a good excuse now not to be transparent, right? Obviously, in terms of business relations, there's still a lot to go, right? But I do believe that we're moving towards more transparency, and this is going to be more and more empowering. It's going to be, you know, something that now it's not a problem of technology anymore. It's not that we don't have the technology. It's if companies are willing to kind of take a new look at how they can work with data, right? How they can use data to properly manage their operations, and best of all, to reduce costs. They all are under pressure to reduce costs. So I think it's gone are the days, the good old days of shipping, where everybody was making a lot of money, high profit, and therefore, you know, we don't need to look at all these problems. But today they need to, right? The industry is changing. And so I'm glad that we are right here, right at the right time, where all this is actually possible.
Yeah, I would say it's inevitable. It's basically, it's happening, it's mm-hmm. going to continue to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of time, and some people will resist it more than others, and whoever will resist it eventually will have to give in. But I'd love also to shift a little bit the conversation and talk about the human side of things in a sense of also skill sets, mindsets. Let's take startups, for example, right? So what do you see that for a successful startup, for something to succeed, do you see that the team should have a technical side, a sales side? I mean, you know the usual concept, you know, there should be a sales guy, there should be a technical guy, there should be guy or girl. I mean, there should be a technical person. But do you see certain patterns? Like, are there certain skills that should be present in a startup to make sure you're complete rather than, you know, lost in one side?
You know, when you are running a B2C startup, probably marketing is one of your most important assets. But when you are doing a B2B startup, you need strong business development expertise. And I would say across all the startups that we have, or any typical B2B startups, business development is their weakest. Yeah. What does that mean? Because when you're working with large corporates and you're trying to, whether you're piloting or commercializing a large project, business development takes a very different terminology, right? The ability to size the potential problem, the value of that problem, to build a business case for the company to be willing to work with a small company, a startup company that may not have a very strong track record, because corporates tend to want to be safe, right? You know, the good old days of you, if you don't use IBM, you know, you may be at risk of being fired. Actually, it's similar. That mentality still remains.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So why would I work with a startup if that may risk me losing my job? And that's still what we face now. And then it's not just that one person who's going to make that decision. There's so many people, right? Because you can't build a case if you don't understand the problems from each of this so-called supply chain, this whole value chain of people that are involved.
Yes.
So therefore, a very good business development person, and I hate to say, Asia is not known for that. Right? You can find maybe large corporate strategic selling people a lot in the States, in Europe. In Asia, we're not known to have this kind of skill sets. Not many of us have. So how do you pitch large projects and actually co-create? That's the other thing, right? Not every problem is that obvious to a corporate. And not every solution is immediately obvious to them also. Because innovation is not something that they are also trained to think or work with at a corporate. So we kind of imagine the role that the business development needs to take on to work with that. Mm-hmm. Right? And that tangible amount of savings need to be articulated before a corporate will say, okay, I'm going to give you a contract. And it's not a one-time contract. It's an annual contract. Most of maritime startup contracts are not for one-off. Typically, you do sign at least a year, if not 3 years. And a lot of these innovation work requires maintenance. So you do need ongoing maintenance as well. So you can imagine, as much as we're saving millions of dollars on every one small little solution, but when we implement the project, it impacts a lot of divisions, a lot of processes. Yeah. So therefore, no corporate is just going to sign off a one-time deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I see that as, in fact, the biggest critical success factor.
Mm.
Right? It's not even about funding. In fact, that's the other interesting thing about B2B startups. I think that if you are able to have that strong business development expertise, get a good project, you almost can self-fund, even from your very first project.
Yes.
And one customer can keep you very busy.
Yes. Excellent. Very fascinating, really. Thank you for that input. I hadn't thought about it from that angle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to look also at the skills needed in the next 5 years, right? So let's talk in startups.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they are more entrepreneurial, more visionary, more, and I'm pretty sure that these digital skills are going to be more and more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
But also, let's take for a moment the corporate world, right? And the people that you're interacting on the corporate world tend to be the innovation arms and all of that. But do you see as a Do you see certain patterns like this? These big companies, they will be needing certain types of skill sets more and more to also implement or maybe change themselves as a company, or do you see certain patterns?
Yeah, I think mindset is very important. Well, maybe it's related, mindset and skill sets, right? Because
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, nothing wrong with someone having worked in the same job for many, many years, which is what you will see in the maritime industry typically, somebody who's maybe in the same department for many years. Yeah, he may have rose up the ranks, but he's doing the same kind of functional work, right? But they may not understand how to treat data. They may not know how to change the way they collect data and analyze data and use data. Therefore, it's very, very important in the whole process of digital transformation for people who've been doing a lot of work manually to equip them with a better understanding of how, not just about, you know, having machinery, computers, technology to automate, they themselves need to have a data appreciation. If they don't know how that data would end up and become a good artificial intelligence or machine learning platform, yeah, then, you know, they will still be working in the same way and resist any change in the process. So that's, I think, the number one education that all big maritime conglomerates need to focus on. Back to school, actually, right? Allow people time off to go and understand data appreciation. So you don't need to know how to code, but you do need to know how the data will eventually be used. And in a whole myriad of complexity of how it all interacts with other data that maybe is not, you know, you are not the owner of the data, but you need to know how the data that you collect is going to interact with the data that's collected from another division or another source. I don't think a lot of people think about that. They don't think about the fact that even though you can digitalize everything, but the people are the ones who are still thinking, right? And the people are still the one that's required to implement all these processes.
I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that because and you attend a lot of conferences, I go to a lot of conferences, and it's that the common denominator are usually is technology, right? Technology this, technology that, AI, whatever, digital transformation, blockchain, machine learning, all these buzzwords, automation, right?
Yeah.
But fundamentally, and really back to the principle of it, is you can have whatever technology you like, but if the change management piece, which is always related to the mindset of the people implementing those technologies, is not right, and they don't understand why they're doing it, or furthermore, in many cases, they are afraid that that technology will take their job, or they will be fired, or they will be automated, it's unlikely that they will make it work, right? Yeah. They will figure out a way to sabotage the whole thing. So you can have the best of systems.
Exactly.
There was, I think, a quote that a motivated team of people with Excel will beat a demotivated team of people with the most advanced AI tool.
Yeah.
It's true. And it's very little, it's in some ways interesting, but in other ways it has to change. It's very little that, not enough importance that companies put into this human element to the technology change, to the digital transformation change. And it's interesting that you mentioned it as well.
Yeah, and I probably want to add to this mindset thing about, you know, I have a favorite hashtag, which is test and learn, right? And I've been in corporate for more than two decades, and, you know, working for big companies like IBM, Digital 3Com, I definitely know how complicated corporates are, the metric systems, etc. So, you know, when you're working for big companies like that, it is inevitable for you to feel that you are such a small cog in the wheel, right? That you're not going to be able to make any changes. So it is so important in every corporate culture now to have, to really empower the employees with this test and learn attitude. So in the last 2 years, I have learned how to scale, how to start something with this attitude. And when you know how to do that, a lot of things can happen, which also means you need to have the agility, right? the persistence to be able to kind of reiterate, be willing to reiterate. But you can still plan your reiteration, right? Some people think, oh my God, then I'm putting the whole company into chaos. No. Test and learn doesn't mean that you don't know exactly what you're doing or where you're going, right? It just means that you are taking measured steps in knowing exactly what you're testing and what you're prepared to learn from it and then what you're going to do with your learning.
Mm.
Right? It doesn't stop there. And that's what I found very, very powerful. If companies adopt this startup, lean startup attitude of test and learn.
Mm.
That's something I'm hoping that these companies will also bring on board so that the people can scale up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's my hope as well. And it's interesting because on the headhunting side and on the executive search side of our business, when people all typically when they come to us with a transformation project and I say, okay, we want you to find us the CEO or the president or whatever, they always, almost always say, okay, we want somebody that has done transformation, entrepreneurial, da da da. But then when it actually comes to the selection process, you figure out that they want Apple for Apple. You know? And like, guys, you know, you talk a big game, but actually, you know, it's not exactly walking the talk.
True.
But it's slowly changing. Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamario.com/podcast for all the show notes, links and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.